Welcome back to True Crime San Antonio. I am just another San Antonio native, and thank you for tuning in. We are back and rolling for season two, and if you're new to the show, we cover crime from San Antonio, Texas exclusively. I chose to do this podcast because I wanted to tell the stories, not of the perpetrators who committed their crimes, but of the people who we've lost. Today's story is a prime example of one of those we lost. And I say we, because this loss affects all of us. The young, driven, and talented Asante Contreras was killed by a man who fell through the cracks of our bail bond system and left the family without their beloved son, brother, and friend. How many times can someone attempt to evade arrest and still make bond? I got the answer this time. But first, San Antonio, True Crimes This Week. A teenager is facing murder charges after shooting and killing his mother's fiance. Live Oak police arrested 17-year-old Austin James Markowski after he shot 36-year-old Jorge Luis Duran. After he said he saw him pull out a knife and push his mother, Erica Renee Rendon, to the ground. The mother, Markowski, his younger brother, and Duran were moving from San Antonio to a new home in Live Oak. Police said 3 days before the move, Markowski's brother refused to help the family with packing and taking boxes to the new home. Witnesses told police that Duran made it known to the mother that he was not happy about her son not helping. The mother told Duran that her son had a mental illness and to leave it alone. Police also learned that Duran and the brother had gotten into a fight at their old home. On New Year's Eve, Markowski's grandfather called him and said that his brother had torn up the new wood flooring in their mother's bedroom. When the mother and Duran came home, Markowski told police he was in the shower and he heard a loud noise. He then grabbed a Glock handgun that belonged to his mother and went downstairs to investigate the noise. Police said then that the brother and Duran were fighting about the damage caused to the floors and for not helping. Once things calmed down, the brother slapped Duran in the face and cursed at him. That's when the mother and the grandfather attempted to separate the two. Then the mother was able to push her other son into the bedroom and the argument continued. The mother was holding the brother back when he reached around and slapped Duran in the face. Police said the mother and the brother fell or may have been pushed to the ground by Duran as he was attempting to get to the brother. As this happened, Markowski came into the bedroom and saw Duran push his mother to the floor. That's when Markowski told police that Duran pulled a red knife with a blade not extended, and that's when he shot him 4 times. Duran was then taken to Brooke Army Medical Center where he later died. The 17-year-old Markowski is facing a murder charge and his bond is set at $300,000. It's sad. This kid may have just thrown his life away. If they don't get him for murder one, they'll at least try and get him for manslaughter. That's 20 years easy. Also, two children accused of stabbing and beating their mother inside their Far West Side apartment have been ordered to remain in custody. 13 and 16-year-old siblings appeared before a judge this week at the Frank M. Tejeda Jr. Juvenile Justice Center. The younger child, who turned 13 this last Wednesday, attended the hearing in person, while his 16-year-old sister took part in the hearing by Zoom. Their mother, who was in critical condition after the attack, also was able to join the hearing remotely. Prosecutors called both the children a danger to themselves and others. Judge Carlos Quesada ultimately decided that they should remain in custody at least until their hearings next month. The two teens, whose names are being withheld because of their ages, attacked their mother around 5 a.m. this last Wednesday. According to a neighbor, that day, the mom was telling the son as they were walking up the stairs, "You're grounded, I'm taking away the TV." The court hearing didn't reveal any details about the incident itself, but the attorney representing the boy, Eric Baker, told KSAT 12 News that the police reports state his client had made prior outcries about abuse and that the children may have been trying to get away when they allegedly went on the attack. The San Antonio Police Department did not make the report available to the media because of the children's ages. Both attorneys say they expect more details about the incident to come out as the cases proceed. I won't begin to speculate because we have no idea what happened here. If these kids were being abused and they felt their only way was to defend themselves or attack their mom, that's sad. But sometimes when you're in a fight for your life, you can't blame somebody for doing such. On the other hand, if that's not the case, then that's even more sad. Also, the latest halt to jury trials continues to leave thousands of cases on hold, which is causing an overcrowding problem at Bexar County Jail and leaving families frustrated as their loved ones wait for their day in court. I myself have been waiting for a few cases to be settled. Last season I told you about Baby King Jay. Well, the grandmother Beatrice Sampaio is still awaiting her trial. It was supposed to happen in early January, but it's now being postponed, probably until the end of March, if not later. Also, the R.C. Curtis case. If you remember, that's the case where he allegedly killed his wife's grandmother. That case ended in a mistrial last year when new evidence came to light. His court has now been reset to March 23rd. Marisol Benavides has also been closely following the case of her niece, Delaney Chavez, who was charged with tampering with evidence in the death of her 18-month-old James Chavez. Justice isn't being served for James, and he doesn't deserve that. We don't deserve that, she said. Chavez's trial, which was expected to take place in early January as well, was reset for February 17th, and will be reset again as in-person trials are on hold until at least March the 1st. The latest COVID-19 surge forced local administrative judge Rosie Alvaro to prolong the latest suspension of in-person jury trials. Some cases, like Edmund Johnson, who is accused of arson and the murder of San Antonio firefighter Scott Deem, dates back to 2017. That's a case that I have been looking forward to as well. It's one that I am going to tell this season, hopefully, if we can get some closure in this trial. According to Judge Alvaro, there are 3,300 civil cases on hold across 14 civil district courts, and as of last November, there were about 30,000 criminal cases in the 23 county and criminal district courts on hold. The backlog is also causing overcrowding issues, which Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar recently addressed at the latest commissioner's court meeting. Sheriff Salazar suggested that they move jury selections or trials to the Freeman Coliseum or the AT&T Center. These are huge stadiums here in San Antonio. The AT&T Center, much bigger than the Freeman, but could provide for a lot of room and space. Judge Alvaro said that back in 2020, members of the judiciary did tour the AT&T Center and the Freeman Coliseum twice, but in the end, funding was needed for the move for logistics, such as staffing and proper security. It was discovered that back in 2020, no formal request was made ever to the commissioner's court about funding or for such a move. At the last commissioner's court meeting, Judge Nelson Wolf and other commissioners did acknowledge the problem but said that even if a move was able to be made to either the Freeman or the AT&T Center, it would have to wait until after the rodeo was concluded, and that happens here in the middle of February of 2022. In the meantime, all these families are going to have to wait for their justice to be served. And lastly, sometimes these stories hit close to home. I always try to treat them with respect because you never know who might listen to them or who they could affect. I read every crime report that comes through. And the night before last, I saw the story of 39-year-old Marianne Guerra Pompa. Officers were called on Monday, January the 31st, to the 2400 block of Texas Avenue, not far from Culebra Road and North General McMullen Drive on the city's west side, at around 2:20 p.m. That's when they found Marianne injured. First responders tried to revive her, but she was pronounced dead shortly after. Her cause and manner of death have not been released by SAPD or the Bexar County Medical Examiner's Office, but her mother, Betty, said she had a fractured skull. She had no idea her daughter was going through a possible domestic abuse situation, as she learned some details from the father-in-law, and also that Marianne never wanted to press charges. When she received the call that her daughter passed away, she thought it might be COVID-related, but soon learned that this was a crime scene and a murder, and took video of her son-in-law, 39-year-old Pedro Pompa, being arrested. San Antonio police, during an interview with Marianne's husband, Pedro, said that his story didn't add up to the evidence at the scene. He was quickly arrested and charged with murder. "It just breaks my heart why he took her life," she said. "I don't understand." After they were told about it being a crime scene, she just couldn't believe it. She said aloud, "Why did he take her life? Why?" She said Marianne's children, ranging between 5 and 21, are beyond devastated. Marianne was loved by her family and friends. Betty is praying her daughter's story encourages victims of domestic abuse to get out while they can. "Love is blind," she said. "If there's a problem, get help. Call your parents. Don't stay in that situation and suffer. Don't hide. We are here to help you." Marianne's children are now in the custody of her sister, who is raising money to afford to take care of them. While police are still investigating what led up to her daughter's death, she had this to say to her son-in-law. "He does not deserve to live, but I am not God. And I will not forgive him for what he's done because he cannot bring her back. Was this all worth it? Losing your family?" Pompa was charged with murder and still awaiting an indictment, being held at the Bexar County Jail, and his bond was set at $500,000. My mom received a text from Marianne's mom a couple days after, telling her of her daughter's passing. "They've been friends for like 30 years, and I kind of grew up with Marianne's younger sister. They were cheerleaders, I was a football player, but I knew them both. This is absolutely devastating for their family, and I can't even begin to know what they're going through right now. It's just another reminder to me that these aren't just words on the screen. They're not some story of people you don't know. These are people that live in my city, people we know. My mom is in pain because she knew Marianne. She heard the pain in her mom Betty's voice. I'm so sorry for your loss, and I hope Marianne gets justice. I wish this had not happened. I really don't know what to say. Sorry." I'll be keeping up with this case and let you know what happens. Alright, I think we're good. Here we go. Episode 18. This story displays accounts of violence and adult themes that may be found disturbing and unsuitable for some. Listener discretion is advised. It was May the 3rd, 2020. At around 9:45 p.m., San Antonio police came across a vehicle whose plates indicated an individual associated with an active warrant. When the officer hit up his lights and tried to initiate a traffic stop at Petrenko Road and Waterston Place on the far west side of San Antonio, the person driving the vehicle took off and led officers on a chase that reached speeds of up to 80 miles per hour. The driver made his way 23 miles to the other side of the city. I won't begin to assume what the officers did to attempt to stop his vehicle. For example, did they try a pit maneuver? That maneuver is a pursuit tactic used by police by which a pursuing vehicle can force a fleeing vehicle to turn sideways abruptly, causing the driver to lose control and stop. This maneuver can be successful, but can also be a threat to other drivers on the road if not done properly. Only judging by the facts, the suspect could have made his way down Highway Loop 410, which no matter time of the day is an extremely busy highway, making the pit maneuver probably not a viable option or a risk they just weren't willing to take. The suspect must have then taken an exit, trying to lose the many police cruisers chasing him by this point. Entered a ramp going the wrong way on Interstate 35 from Northeast Loop 410, and crashed head-on into a Ford Mustang, almost right in front of exit 27B. The pictures of the damaged vehicles were absolutely horrifying. The front end of both vehicles were crushed and almost discernible. San Antonio police were on scene immediately, and the fire department soon arrived. He's lucky they showed up when they did, because the suspect's car burst into flames as he was pulled from the wreck by officers. Later, investigators searched his vehicle and found a loaded .357 Magnum handgun, drug paraphernalia, and more than $16,000. The victim in the Ford Mustang was pronounced dead at the scene. He was only identified that night on the news as a 20-year-old man. I remember watching the news that night and thinking, damn, he was only 20. The person responsible was in custody and taken by ambulance to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Both would be identified the next day, and on that early Monday morning at around 8:14 a.m., Del Rio police knocked on the door of Anya Contreras' home and told her that her 20-year-old son, Asante Contreras, was killed in a head-on collision. Anya said to the officers, No, he was at work. He's working. He's a paramedic. He's at work. She was in shock. She then tried to call him, but Asante didn't answer his phone. The suspect was identified as 36-year-old Joseph William Willard, the same person whose warrant popped up on that officer's screen. He had borrowed the car that he wrecked that night from a friend, and it was assumed that the friend knew he was on the run. But it was then that the tragedy of this event would truly unfold. You see, it wasn't Willard's first encounter with the police. On March the 1st, 2019, just 14 months before the fatal accident, a 7-year deputy with the Bexar County Sheriff's Office attempted to make a traffic stop. Willard was behind the wheel of that vehicle. He bailed and fled on foot towards a wooded area before eventually running into the Blazing Star RV Resort in the 1100 block of West Loop 1604 near West Military Drive on the city's far west side. The deputy entered the RV park, gun drawn, and was seen by several residents looking in between campers, searching and yelling out for Willard. Willard was seen pulling out a shotgun with a camouflage design from under his jacket. Video taken by a technician working the area shows the deputy approaching the man with his gun drawn before the technician leaps into the back of his work truck. Off screen, gunfire can be heard. You can hear 14 shots taken by the deputy, and you can make out at least 2 from a distance away, likely from Willard's shotgun. Fortunately, the deputy was not hit. Willard, though, was critically injured and was airlifted to University Hospital. Cell phone video taken from a resident of the RV park shows Willard handcuffed and conscious outside the RV as deputies and EMS personnel tended to him. Willard was shot several times in the lower extremities and the upper body, but would survive the encounter, obviously. The rounds from the deputy's service weapon marked some metal boxes outside one of the residents' RV. While 2 holes penetrated the side of a pickup across the row, showing where shotgun slugs punched through the metal. At least one of the slugs appeared to have gone through the other side of the truck bed and hit another RV. Willard was out to kill that deputy that day. And an interview done with Leroy Avalos, a resident at the park who was held up in his RV with his 8-month-old daughter fearing the gunfire outside. He said there was normally a lot of people out and about in the RV park, and he thinks about anyone else, possibly his neighbors or even his daughter, who could have been hurt. I think this guy should just, you know, get put up. I don't think he deserves to be out in the free world like that. How right you were, Leroy. Sheriff Javier Salazar of the Bexar County Sheriff's Office described Willard as a dangerous and career criminal that day. He said he was glad to have him in custody before he could harm anybody, As far as Willard's past criminal activities go, well, he was arrested in November 2001 for criminal trespassing, assault causing bodily injury, criminal mischief, and evading arrest. He was given 2 years probation in December of 2001, which was revoked, and he ended up doing a year in jail. Willard had a DWI in December of 2002, just a little over a month after being released, and was given probation once again in August of 2003. A motion to revoke his probation was granted in November of 2003, and he served another 75 days in jail. He managed to stay out of trouble for almost 6 years, until July of 2009, when he was arrested for the possession of marijuana, resisting arrest, making a terroristic threat, and evading arrest again. He would plead no contest, and yet again was granted a 4-year probation term. Are we seeing a pattern yet? Less than a year later, probation was revoked, and while trying to serve his warrant, Willard was charged with evading arrest once again. He was sent back to jail for a 6-month sentence where he would be released in less than 2 months. I'm not sure who overlooked the pattern thus far, but it's adding up. Tack on another DWI in May of 2012, sentenced to 4 months, and looks to have only served 1 month of that sentence. Willard was charged with assault causing bodily injury in March of 2012, sentenced to 4 months in April of 2013, and subsequently released early in June of 2013. Once again, he managed to stay out of trouble, this time for almost 3 years, until he was arrested in January of 2016 for possession of marijuana, possession of a controlled substance penalty grade 3, which usually means a prescription drug without a prescription, and once again resisting arrest. He was sentenced to 14 days in jail. In September of 2016, Willard was arrested for evading arrest for the 4th time and given a 2-year sentence, actually serving his full sentence this time. He would be arrested for his 3rd DWI and his 5th evading arrest charge on February the 2nd, 2019, just a month before that shootout with BCSO. Willard was charged with evading arrest and aggravated assault against a public servant for the shootout. He was out on bond in the amount of $335,000, something I think everyone wished didn't happen. That means when Willard was evading arrest in the incident that took young Asante Contreras' life, he was doing so for at least the 6th time. He would be charged for evading arrest, felon in the possession of a firearm, and felony 1 murder. Willard said he blamed police for getting him shot, and that he wouldn't go back to jail if he was caught, according to officials. He was indicted by a grand jury on July the 22nd, 2020. Willard's pretrial was to start on October the 9th, 2020. However, during a pretrial hearing, the 144th District Court Judge Melissa Skinner recused herself, since she had been the prosecutor assigned to Willard's attempted capital murder case. I've had a lot to do with speaking with the family members in those cases, and so I would absolutely have a conflict, Judge Skinner commented. The last thing this case needed was anything for him to use for an appeal. On December the 17th, 2021, Joseph William Willard would finally see his day in court. Willard, now 37 years old, pleaded guilty to the murder of Asante Contreras, stemming from the crash that happened on May the 3rd, 2020, and was sentenced up to 60 years in prison. Prior to Willard's sentence, Asante's mother, Anya Contreras, made a victim impact statement via Zoom from a home in Del Rio, Texas. She described her son as a beacon and a sunshine in person. She said her son felt called to a career in healthcare with a lifelong goal of becoming an emergency room doctor. He wanted to save lives, she said. Asante was loved more than you will ever know.
Had he been able to that night, he would have dragged himself out of the car to check on you. That's who he was, always dedicated to others. She was talking to Willard through sobs as she held a photograph of her son. I hate what you did to my boy. How badly you broke my beautiful, innocent boy. There you are, thinking only of yourself. Asante worked 3 jobs to put himself through school. I was so proud of him. Why didn't you stop? You broke us all. You robbed him of his future, his dreams. He had the brightest future ahead. He did everything right. She recalled Asante as a lifeguard for the city of Del Rio, had once saved a child from drowning. She told the story of a 78-year-old man who called her to describe how Asante, an aspiring paramedic at the time, had cleaned him up after he had soiled himself, then went out of his way to comfort him, treating him with dignity during a horrible situation. That man called me after reading of Asante's death and said, "Please don't let it be him." District Attorney Joe Gonzalez said nothing deterred this defendant from violence. Not a shootout with law enforcement, not high bonds, not even the risk he posed to innocent people like Asante Contreras. No amount of prison time will make the Contreras family whole again. This defendant will have decades to think about the life he took and the life he led that put him where he belongs, behind bars. Willard will have to serve a minimum of 30 years in prison before he can be considered for parole in 2050 when he's 66 years old based on time served. Appearing via Zoom from the Bexar County Jail, Willard apologized to Asante's mother shortly after Judge Mary sentenced him. "I'm very sorry," he told the court. "From the bottom of my heart, I wish I could take it back. I truly am sorry." As part of the plea agreement reached between prosecutor Ryan Wright and defense attorney John Kuntz, 6 other criminal cases were taken into consideration, in which Willard agreed to take responsibility: driving while intoxicated, 2 instances of evading arrest, an aggravated assault on a public servant, all from 2019, felon in possession of a firearm, and evading arrest, both from 2020. Willard admitted guilt to all by admitting true to the charges. He also forfeited any right to appeal his sentence. Judge Mary also ordered Willard to pay restitution to the victim's family for any medical, psychiatric, and funeral expenses incurred, which he said would be sorted out and determined by someone other than his court. Anya Contreras blames the justice system for letting her son's killer be free to do what he did, and for having to bury her son. "I'm glad he's off the street. I don't think he should have ever been out to begin with. He should have never been out on bond. He won't hurt anybody else, because I don't think he was ever going to change," said Anya. She said she doesn't understand why Willard was able to make bond after leading deputies on a chase that ended in that shootout in March of 2019. She believes it was a mistake by the justice system that cost her son his life. Anya believes that if Willard hadn't been out on bond, her son would have graduated and he'd be wearing his uniform right now. Instead, he was buried in it. She talked about how Asante should have been starting his life. He had it together and he was going to go places. And it breaks my heart that he doesn't get the chance to do that because he deserved to. In August of 2021, Senate Bill 6, also known as the Damon Allen Act, was passed by the Texas legislature. Governor Abbott said the bail bill, named after a slain state trooper, makes it harder for dangerous criminals to be released from jail on bail. Trooper Allen was killed during a traffic stop in 2017. The suspect was out of jail on a $15,500 bond after allegedly assaulting another sheriff's deputy. The bill will change how and if people can be released from jail before their criminal cases are resolved, while they are still legally presumed innocent. Currently, most Texas jail releases are determined by the defendant's ability to post cash, but some jurisdictions have recently shifted to releasing people accused of low-level crimes on personal bonds, which don't require cash but can include restrictions like GPS ankle monitoring or routine drug testing. Willard had been released earlier in his criminal career on a PR bond, but not on the bond that he was out on when Asante was killed. Senate Bill 6 will ban the release of people accused of violent crimes on personal bonds, requiring instead that they be able to post the amount of cash set by the court or pay a percentage to a bail bonds company. It will also disallow cashless release for those arrested on any felony charge if they are already out of jail on bond in a violent criminal case. Those changes went into effect on December the 2nd, 2021. Other pieces of the bill, such as creating a new system for court officers to receive and review the criminal history of defendants before setting bail, went into effect in January of 2022. There are civil rights advocates who claim the bill will exacerbate wealth-based detention and lead to overfilled jails. But there are families and mothers like Melanie Infinger who lost her daughter Caitlin when Caitlin's estranged husband allegedly killed her shortly after being released on a personal bond. He'd previously been arrested and accused of assaulting Caitlin. While this bill wouldn't have helped save Asante's life, considering Willard posted his cash bail and clearly had access to large amounts of cash after being caught with $16,000 in his possession in the accident, it might prevent the deaths of innocent people. I think you can find arguments on both sides. For me, the tragic death of Asante Contreras should have never happened. I get that every person deserves their day in court, and we've talked about it before, the purpose of a bond isn't to punish, but to assure the defendant shows up for court. But after 5 previous evading arrest charges, the courts couldn't say they didn't know he was a high risk. I've seen so many people posting about Asante and how he made an impact on their lives, how he was an inspiration to many, and has become an even bigger influence to those who have that loving and caretaking spirit that overflowed from within Asante. I myself have been moved by what this young man accomplished and did in such a short time. Yet I feel horrible that he moved to my city to pursue his dream and cross paths with this selfish and reckless individual. This young man had dreams of going to medical school and saving lives. He should have gone on to do so. But he did save lives on that night though. Of that, I have no doubt. He unknowingly gave his life so no one else would have to die that night. I know it brings no peace to his family, who is forever incomplete, but Asante is a hero who deserves recognition and justice. I found Asante's social media accounts and I found that he liked to post quotes. So I found one that reminded me of him and I'd like to share it. Too often, we underestimate the power of a touch, a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or the smallest act of caring, all of which have the potential to turn a life around. Leo Buscaglia. As we do on True Crime San Antonio, we remember Asante Contreras. Asante Sebastian Contreras was born on January the 26th, 2000 in Del Rio to parents Anya and Salvador Contreras. Asante was a baby with 2 other siblings. He was colorblind, but he never let it stop him from anything. Before graduating high school, Asante worked as a lifeguard for the city of Del Rio. While attending Del Rio High School, Asante was involved in ROTC Honor Guard, Student Council, Debate Club, Pole Vaulting, Yearbook Creation, and many other school activities. While attending school, Asante also worked as an EMT with the Amistad Medical Ambulance Company, volunteering his time in 2019 as a standby EMT. He was pictured wearing his uniform in a classroom full of children with the biggest smile on his face. He then pursued his future career at the University of Texas Health Science Center of San Antonio, also known as UTESCA for many of those who've studied there. Asante worked as an emergency medical technician for Allegiance Mobile Health in San Antonio, and as a student in the School of Health Professions program, was fulfilling his dream of becoming a paramedic. While not working and saving lives, Asante enjoyed putting smiles on people's faces. He was always willing to help a lending hand. He could cheer anyone up. His favorite hobbies included going to the gym, playing video games, snow skiing, snowboarding, skateboarding. He was just fun. He was only 1 week away from successfully completing the program and 2 days short of taking his final exam. His mother, Anya, planned on coming to San Antonio on that Tuesday to celebrate her son. She told him in a text message that she would be sitting in the parking lot while he was inside testing and send positive vibes and energy his way. She recalled one of her last conversations with her son. She said, "I'll sit in the parking lot and read my book. And when you come out, we'll go celebrate." Asante showed his youth even after death. He hid a motorcycle he bought for himself from his mom, knowing she wouldn't approve. His sister Amanda called him a typical teenager. President and Dr. William L. Henrich authorized Asante to receive his certification posthumously. He was fully expected to successfully complete the program and earn his UT Health San Antonio diplomas at Dr. Lance Villers, professor and chair of the Department of Emergency Health Sciences. The EMS profession will never fully realize the loss of Asante's potential and dedication, Dr. Villers added. Thousands of dollars were raised to cover the cost of Asante's funeral, a testament to the kindness he showed to many and strangers alike. Asante's body was escorted from San Antonio to his hometown of Del Rio by first responders, some co-workers, and others, strangers. The procession was quite beautiful and went on for miles. A gesture Anya said her son would have been proud of. Anya says anytime he saw an ambulance anywhere, he would thump his chest and go, "Those are my people." He was just so proud. He found his calling. That was it for him. She posts often to this day about her grief and broken heart over the loss of her baby boy. Asante left behind a sister, Amanda, and brother, Andre, who loved their baby brother dearly. I found a trove of pictures posted by Anya on social media. One is of Amanda holding baby Asante. It's captioned, "From the start, you had her wrapped around your little finger. Sissy would do anything for you. How many want to go have lunch did she give in to? Now she's lost without you." Anya and her family want to change the laws on police pursuits and wish the San Antonio police would have ended the pursuit of Willard before he killed Asante. They hope to one day have that law be known as Asante's Law. Most of all, she just wants her son back. She writes that she won't ever give up this fight, and I hope she doesn't. She finished an interview once by saying, "We miss him every day, and we love him always, and we will see him again." And that's our story. I hope you take some time today to show kindness and tell that someone in your life how you feel. We don't know if we'll get another chance. If you're a fan of the show, show your love with a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to help us grow. Let me know your thoughts on Instagram at True Crime San Antonio. Would love to hear from you. Truly. This has been True Crime San Antonio. And I am just another San Antonio native, hoping to see us through. Take care.